Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks for coming to visit me.
Oh, yeah, man. Sorry it took so long. You look really bad. What happened?
It was horrible. So, about a week ago, I went on a date with my wife, and I think I had some bad shrimp. And I got super sick at the restaurant. And then, as I was scrambling towards the bathroom, I tripped and fell over something, and I twisted my ankle. I could barely walk. Then, as I was hobbling home, some guy jumped out from behind a bush. He stole my backpack, and then he stabbed me in the stomach right over here. So, I'm lying here, all stitched up, feeling horrible. Oh.
Wow, that sounds incredibly awful.
I don't know.
You don't know what?
I don't know about Steve. I mean, it's been over a week and he's not even really better.
So?
I'm just saying that if he maybe, you know, made a little more effort, he'd be better by now. You know, get some fresh air, go for a run, eat some vegetables.
Well, I can't really walk and even at the best of times run. Plus, I got stitches and my stomach feels pretty sick.
Well, see, there's your first problem. See, I don't really believe in food poisoning. It's not in the Bible. It's just something that doctors and big pharma really came up to sell people more drugs. Like, have you even tried not having food poisoning?
What?
Well, I mean, like, I know that you say that you feel like this, but really, a lot of it's in your head. If you just change the way that you think, you'd feel a lot better. How can you feel bad for this long, for a whole week? Plus, you missed church. If you would have been there and you would have been worshiping and prayed and took communion, you wouldn't have these kind of feelings.
Al, food poisoning and being stabbed are pretty serious. They're like real medical problems. He needs bandages and stitches, antibiotics, and definitely bed rest.
Wait, okay, did you say antibiotics? Because, Steve, you're not taking those, are you?
Yeah.
I can't believe a self-professing Christian would take some kind of pill just so they can feel normal. Haven't you read online about the dangers of antibiotics? How they're overprescribed? I mean, how can you take something that is going to change who you are on the inside? Okay, Steve, listen. Lift your shirt. I want to see something. Let me see the stitches. Okay, do you see that, Chad? He's bleeding. It's like he's not even trying to get better. I mean, have you even tried not bleeding? Maybe you should be out there serving people, helping others like a real Christian, instead of just lying there making yourself bleed and taking a bunch of pills so you feel better. Did Job or Paul or Jesus take antibiotics? No. Did they use tensor bandages? No. Did they get stitches? No. You need more faith, man. No, listen, I'm not done. He needs to hear this. Him and all the people like him that have been wallowing around complaining about food poisonings and stabbings and ankles, this has been happening for way too long. It is all in their heads. They just need to be more positive, have more faith, get off the medicine, and trust in God. You don't see me complaining about being stabbed.
Well, have you ever been stabbed?
Well, no, but that's because I have more faith and a positive attitude. See, there are real problems in this world. Famine and plague and terrorism. You're just sitting there making things up like stabbings and ankles and food poisoning.
Did you just knock Al out with one punch? I think he broke his nose. He's lying on the floor. He's bleeding a lot.
Yeah, Steve, but you know what? It's okay.
Why?
Well, because he doesn't believe in broken noses or bleeding. So I guess it didn't happen.
You're a good friend.
Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that covers hot topics, current events, and answers your questions to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. Here's Dr. Chad Graham, Pastor Al Desjardins, and your host, Steve Bastian.
I really do appreciate that we were talking about this. The statistics on depression and suicide rates, just the spikes of suicide depression is in January. And so I thought it'd be a really good time to talk about what depression is and what does the Bible say about it. But I think it's really important that we define what is depression. As you guys, when you've been pastors doing counseling, when do you say that this looks like depression?
That's actually a really critically important question, because to know the difference between sadness and grief and clinical depression or depression that we are using is really important. One of the problems is that we have really lost the use of the term depressed, and it's a very specific medical term. It's a very specific term for a very specific condition, and we've kind of grabbed onto it in popular culture, and we just use it constantly. So at the end of the movie, something sad happened, and then you walk out and you say, "I feel depressed," you know, or like you said, you have a really big turkey sandwich and you feel bad about yourself, you go to lie down and you say, "I feel depressed." We've kind of lost the meaning, in the same way we've lost the meaning of the word awesome, right? It used to mean something like mind-bogglingly amazing, that was something powerful, like almost on a godly level. Now we've lost that term. Now even, you know, like I just had an awesome taco, you know, my friend is so awesome. Like we've lost the meaning of this word. So I just want to clarify, I think the first thing we're going to do just to clarify this definition is talk about the difference between sadness and depression. Okay, so just someone who is sad, the basic idea, if you want to know the difference, is that when someone is sad, the nuance is that they are someone who has had something happen to them and they feel sad about it or they feel bad about it, but then it gets better over time. So you lost the game, you failed the test, you broke your arm, and that sadness gets easier over time. In fact, it can be taken away altogether through something positive happening. If you've ever been cheered up by someone because you were going through a bad time, well, that is sadness. Someone walks in and they take you take you out, or they buy you a present, and you feel better, right? Depression doesn't work that way. Depression doesn't require a cause. It doesn't require necessarily a trigger. It can start from something bad happening, but depression doesn't fade. It's a mental illness. It's easier to understand as a real illness, as like a broken bone or a virus or an allergy. You can't just make it go away because you've decided to make it go away. You can't just cheer up and stop being allergic to strawberries. So you can't just cheer up and make your bones fixed. You can't walk up to somebody who's got a virus and say, "Listen, just think more positive and it'll go away." That's the difference. Depression is a biochemical issue in the brain, in the gut, that isn't necessarily triggered by an event, and it doesn't just get better. Sadness does.
My take on the definition would be to say that I almost disagree with every word that Elle said. But
par for the course, that's okay.
But not actually Elle's meaning. What I find unhelpful, and I think, no, this is true. What I find unhelpful is the terms clinical depression and mental illness, because these are actually philosophical categories. They're undefined, undefinable, untestable, unmeasurable. And so they're really unhelpful, and they give people a sense of hopelessness. If you have a broken leg, you can't walk on it. There's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
Depression can have physical issues. You can be physically ill, which leads to what we describe as depression, which leads to things like a dark and oppressive mood, which leads possibly to thoughts of death and suicide, which leads to fatigue and loss of energy and all kinds of things that are happening. These can be caused by physical symptoms in the body, or they can be caused by spiritual symptoms in the body. And so I like to use the terms spiritual depression and physical depression. And this is where I agree with Elle. In both of those cases, we're not talking about an airy-fairy thing where someone's like, "I feel kind of sad, and so I should just cheer up," because that's not the way it's going to work.
Or legitimately sad, like someone died and you feel sad and you will eventually feel better.
Sorry, I was speaking on the other side of the category.
I'll get you. Okay, keep going.
I'm with you there. But so we may be spiritually depressed, or we may be physically depressed. And in either case, it's not something, as Elle correctly said, that you can just sort of step out of. You don't just get cheered up, as it were. You're in a very deadening place. I prefer to say it that way, because I think if we go the other way, it leaves somebody in a fairly hopeless position. There are, as I said, if there is a physical cause of depression, there are physical medical remedies which we can pursue. And if there's a spiritual cause, there are spiritual remedies we can pursue. And very often in my experience, they're mixed. People have both things. Sometimes an injury, sometimes something else has led to the initial stages of falling into a state of physical depression, but it's complicated by spiritual issues. So I think that's how I would define it a little bit.
Let me clarify just quickly. I don't want to get stuck on this, but there's kind of two ways you can think about depression when it comes to true depression. And that is things that happen on the inside of you and things that happen to you. Right, so there's a depression that happens inside of you, and that is that has to do with what's happening in your body, and it physically manifests deep, dark feelings, that dark night of the soul. And that I mean, there's major depression, chronic depression, the persistent depression, bipolar, postpartum, premenstrual syndrome, hormone changes in men. All these things happen regardless of circumstances on the outside, and it can throw you into a depression that actually is, you can't just climb out of, you can't just get better from. You could have the best week ever, sunshine, perfect diet, everything would be great, and you would still feel terrible because the chemicals in your brain and your body are working against you. The other side of that is things that happen to you. Regardless of how good you want to feel, something happens to you, and it can actually spin you into a depression, right? Say you get abused, or you get hurt, or you something breaks, or, for example, another one would be seasonal affective disorder. Like the fact that the environment around you is now dark and cold, and you're not getting as much vitamin D, you're not getting as much positive stimulus from the environment. Now
I believe
you
that's
feel
called
sad.
Vancouver syndrome.
Well, that's it, right? And it's real. So that's something that happens outside of you. So depression, and this is where I appreciate what Chad just said, it's not cut and dry. It's super hard to diagnose, and is way overdiagnosed and also way underdiagnosed in people that don't know they have it. It's a very confusing thing, but it is a real issue, and it's more than just being sad.
Yeah, I really appreciate those guys. Yeah, now, depression is a wide range of causes. The medical side of it, it's proven. You know, I've seen people even have their oils in their fingers change dramatically when they're prolonged depression. From a musician I knew that could only play their instrument once before the strings were deader than anything I've ever seen. Ooh. Because his body chemicals were so different. And, you know, that he went through a year of that. And then, you know, as things turn around, all of a sudden his strings would last 2 days, 3 days, until it would last a couple of weeks again.
One of the great questions that we often need to raise with those kind of things, and we generally won't have the competence to work through all the technicalities of the issues, but there are so many issues within the medical science side that I think that we ought to be careful of, just on common logic principles. And again, that's where I made the point before. I very much believe there is physical causes of depression, hormones, injuries, all these different things we've talked about. But we've got to be careful in the sense of things like that. There's often the suggestion that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain. I personally read studies on those. As of yet, nobody has come up with a definitive study. What we measure is changes in chemicals and hormones in the body.
They talk about being unbalanced.
Right.
Unbalanced hormones and chemicals.
Which caused that? Was it the depression that caused the change in the chemicals and hormones, or the chemicals and hormones? We're not going to be able to get into those kinds
chicken
of questions.
And egg.
That's where we're going to send people to go and see their physician.
Yeah, go see your doc. Exactly.
I would want to make a slight shift for us to get into, okay, let's have the discussion now. If a friend comes to us, or in a pastoral situation, someone comes to us and they're really struggling. They can't follow the Lord. They can't live their life in their families. They feel emotionally dead, discouraged, all these things that we've talked about. What do we do with them? And the first thing I'm going to say is, well, we're going to get into what does the Bible have to say about depression, but that's what I just want to transition to is, the first thing I want to say is, tell that person, go see your doctor, and then go see your pastor or whatever. Yep. Go to both, and let's start working on this, but don't just assume, oh, the doctor will fix it, end of story. Or if they just, what was Al's words in the skit? If they just prayed more or something, it would go away.
Prayed more, get out there and serve.
It's not going to be either way. So just to transition us a little bit, I'm going to step personally, if you guys keep talking about it, it's fine. I'm going to step away from the medical side now and just focus on the spiritual aspect.
Okay. That's what I want to ask next is, What the good book, the Bible, not the DSM, the Bible of Mental Health, but
the good book,
the Holy Bible.
What is it now? DSM 75,000? Is that what it would be?
Yeah, every 5 minutes they have to update it now.
What does the Bible say about depression? What nuggets that can you guys pull from the Bible to help us in this situation?
I'll go right to the beginning of the Bible. We're created in God's image, and that has reflection for who we are and our nature and as human beings. And we're created to have a particular relationship to God. And the first person that we see have a disjunctive relationship with God is the first person that we see, or at least potentially the first person we see, that has what we might describe as depression. And that comes from the story of Cain, which our listeners are probably largely familiar with. I don't know if you ever paid a lot of attention as you've read to the account, and I won't go through it in detail, but the basics of the story is that Cain and Abel both bring an offering to God, which is intended to reconcile their relationship to him or to maintain their relationship with him. And Cain brings the wrong sort of offering or does it in the wrong sort of way. There's debate between the scholars. God doesn't accept his offering, however. They are not united. They're still disconnected. There's still a separation between them. And Cain's response is very interesting. Our English translations say something like, he was very angry and his face fell, or his countenance fell. I just want to deal with both phrases. The phrase, he was very angry, is a debated phrase. Some translators and commentators insist that we should probably use this for despondency. It's an idiom in Hebrew that's difficult to bring into English. It certainly can mean anger, and anger actually is usually listed in the literature as part of depression, so that's possible. But I think in this circumstance, the best way to understand it is a kind of despondency anger, a kind of deep-seated frustration. And then it says his face or his countenance fell, and that's very distinctly that his emotion, it was drained out of him. He had that sort of glassy-eyed kind of idea. That's the idea given behind the idea of his face fell. And God came to him, and God said to him in this scenario, this is a spiritual depression issue, God came to him and said to him, hey, if you do well, will not your face be lifted up? Will your heart not joy? That's the idea there. Will you not come back to me and therefore find a solution for this problem? But we know what Cain did. Cain went out and killed his brother. He attempted to take the deadness that was inside of him and solve it by his own actions. And he created what I think we see in the Bible is a sin pattern spiral. We have something that happens to us that separates us from God, and it makes us feel not good. And our response to it, rather than turning to God, is to turn to sin to try to find a way out of it. And that actually makes us feel worse and more dead. The wages of sin, after all, is death, paid out little by little, piece by piece. And we become more deadened, and then we respond again. And we become more deadened, and then pretty soon we can't see ourselves out of the pit. We're in a cave that's dark, and we don't see the light at the top anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think right from the very beginning of the Bible, we see that depression is something rooted in our very nature as human beings and rooted very much in our broken relationship with God, which means we should expect it to be pretty prevalent in the world today.
Well, and that goes right into the fact that the issue of nature and the effect of sin on nature and humanity and our biology and our DNA and everything, like there will be times when we are facing depression because we are physically our DNA is predisposed to it, or because, you know, we get sickness, or because there's sin in the world. And the other side of it is because we are disconnected from God and because we have sin in our lives, that also causes in our lives a very spiritual reality that leads to a true depression. I mean, we live in a world that is not only touched by sin, but is full of sorrow and is full of mourning, right? So I get the first question, Chad asked the question, you know, what should we do when we face this person? Number one, you know, after you've said you should see your, maybe talk to your doctor, talk to your pastor, is to acknowledge the fact that this isn't something that they chose. This isn't their fault. This isn't something that they, you know, they've decided that they're going to do now. I'm just going to wallow and be sad. I'm just going to sit in my bed all the time. They don't want that. So for you to come in there and to try to be their ray of sunshine that tries to get them out of bed and all the rest of that stuff, that doesn't help. You know what I mean? Like, that's why when we talked about in the skit, that's why I was the bad guy in the skit. I was the guy that was coming in and going, okay, listen, just get out of bed. And what's wrong with you, right? That's why we're talking about bleeding. Nobody would argue with bleeding and being stabbed. But in the same
way... Once again, just remind you, that was Al's actual personal belief system. And if you have any complaints about it, you can email carnivoretheology@gmail.com.
It was easier to write than I wanted it to be. But at this, at the same time, then when you look at, for example, you open up the scriptures and you go looking for depression in the scriptures, it is really all over the place. Chad talked about Cain, but think of Job. Job was, without question, obviously Job is a very good example. Was he depressed or was he afflicted? Well, I think, yeah. Job 16:12 says, I was at ease and he broke me apart. He seized me by the neck and he dashed me to pieces, right? This is him looking up to God and just saying, God came to me and he just took my world apart. And sometimes that happens to people. Sometimes it happens to people who are going along just fine and good they feel okay and they're good people and they love Jesus and they're serving the church and they just get hammered and God just chooses at some point to bring upon them the blessing of depression so that he can teach them something. And or for that matter, they are touched by
natural
sin.
Al, did you just say
sin.
The blessing of depression?
I know.
I heard that too. I was thinking.
If you have problems with this phrase, please email up.
No. If you have problems with this phrase, go to my website and look at the last three sermons I did on depression, and hopefully I'll riddle that out. I can't get into that right now.
I can guess what you're saying, but just a one-line explanation to what you mean by that.
About the blessing of depression is that we can see throughout the scriptures how God uses negative times, sickness, death, to draw people to him and bring him glory. For example, the easiest example is Jesus was walking through a town one day, and him and his disciples came upon a man who was born blind. His disciples come to him and say, okay, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? Because that's how everybody thought back then. Obviously, this guy is being punished by God, or his parents are being punished by God. And Jesus looked at them and he said, listen, it wasn't that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. The whole point behind Jesus' words were the fact that his physical handicap, what's happening to him, was God's decision to make him blind, not because of his sin, not because of apparent sin, but because something unique and special needed to happen in his life. A special plan was going to happen in his life that required him to have a certain kind of weakness. Right?
Mm.
Another example, a synagogue leader's little girl. She had to die. Jesus' good friend Lazarus, he had to die. Mary and Martha had to go through deep mourning so that Jesus could show he had the power to raise the dead. The apostle Paul, he had a thorn in his flesh. He had something wrong with him that caused him great distress and great pain. And he begged God to get rid of it. It was something that impeded his ministry, something that frustrated him, something that was, he wanted gone. And God said, no, you need this pain. You need this frustration. It is a blessing to you. Your revelations that I'm giving to you are so great. If I didn't do this for you, you would be a spiritual mess. Your pride would overwhelm you. And therefore, Paul says, I'm going to boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. That's what I talk about when I say the blessing of depression. It's not that we like it. It is that God promises to use it. And sometimes God does it very purposefully. Well, he always does it very purposefully.
Yeah.
But there are times where God really chooses to bless someone with depression because he has a special plan for them. So, yeah, it's a big, huge concept.
You know, it's interesting when you bring that up. It's even the Jeremiah passage that everyone loves. I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Well, they're going into exile. They're going into a generation of suffering. But God's saying that through this suffering, don't think this suffering is the end.
No.
I have a plan in it. I think we could give people comfort in this topic as well.
Well, think about it this way. Like, would we have Psalm 23 if David hadn't gone through the valley of the shadow of death? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Would we even know about the Passover if Israel hadn't spent 400 years in captivity? You know, would we have the example of Job or Noah or Abraham or Sarah or Isaac or, you know, pick anybody in the hall of faith who faced all these terrible hurts and pain, but are there to be our example, and that we have these amazing heroes of the faith, but they all had to go through horrible stuff.
That's great, guys. Even listen to our prosperity gospel episode where we talked about some of the trials that some of us went through and how we now see it was a blessing.
And, well, it kills me. It just kills me. The prosperity gospel just makes me so mad, and I'm not going to go against it here. But man, oh man, like some of the greatest...
Note that Al said he's not going to go against the prosperity gospel. Okay, moving on.
Right now, I won't do it right now. I want to. But like some of the greatest figures of the 20th century, or of all, really some of our greatest heroes, they faced depression. right? Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis, Martin Luther, Charles Spurgeon, Winston Churchill, Abraham Lincoln, John Bunyan. These are guys who faced deep, dark depressions. Charles Spurgeon, there were times he couldn't get out of bed. There, one of the most terrible stories about Charles Spurgeon, and he was mightily used of God. He planted churches and helped so many children and seminaries. I mean, he was mightily used of God. And there was a time in his life where he was so depressed that he couldn't look at a Bible. That when he looked at his Bible, it threw him into such a depressive fit, into such not just frustration, but such deep pain that he actually feared looking at it. He would push it away. It broke his heart just to look at the Bible. And this is a guy who did expository sermons for years and years and years and years that changed the face of modern preaching. Can you see this guy not even able to read his Bible because he was so depressed?
A lot of people have commented that this isn't an unusual experience for some of the greatest pastors in history.
No.
Because God actually uses that. That's the means by which they become these great pastors. And Paul speaks about that in to the Corinthians, says that he suffered so that he might now help those who are suffering.
And not just pastors. Anybody who's going through this stuff can help.
So just encouragement to any of you who want to serve the Lord. Simple way, they call it the Seminary of Pain. You can sign up.
You don't even have to sign up. Just sit there and
email
wait for 5
Al
minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, I want to get to a functional part of this is what can our local churches and individuals in those churches do to help people with depression?
I think the first thing we have to do, the very first thing that we have to do is to be compassionate people. When someone is obviously in sin, the best response is to be compassionate to them. When someone is obviously in pain, the best response is to be compassionate to them. When someone is struggling with a theological question, the best response is to be compassionate to them. And when we start that way, that is the foundation that Christ would use. Remember when he was about to be betrayed by Judas? You know, this is, he's leading up to the final thing, and Jesus gets down and he washes the disciples' feet. And he makes the point that he's there to serve them. And he's just days away from his crucifixion and his betrayal, and not one of those guys will stand by him. And yet here he is serving them. And so he's showing this compassion to a bunch of sinners and failures and one traitor. And so I think that's the thing that I think churches need to remember to start with.
Yep.
And then just ask two simple questions. If the question can be answered in the positive to, does the Bible command or prohibit this behavior? Then whether or not there's a physical component, this is a spiritual issue. That is, I might be angry because of pain in my body, but the Bible says, don't be angry. So I can still deal with my anger in the midst of my pain.
Clarify, it doesn't say don't be angry. It says in your anger, do not sin.
Yeah, fair enough. That's exactly the point that I'm making, is that you have this response, and then what do you do with it?
Yeah.
And so you have a tendency in depression to be despondent, to be faithless, to be hopeless. These things are spiritual things, and we can address them spiritually. And it may be the physical causes that are related to that are still there, but there are people that I know who have been long-term struggling with depression who can still experience in that time joy in the Lord and hope in the Lord, even though they don't have a sort of blissful, happy, get up and go sort of sensation to them. And that's question number one. Question number one, does the Bible command or prohibit this behavior? If it does, we can deal with that aspect spiritually. Again, we'll still encourage them, see your doctor, so forth. The second question to ask is this behavior or symptom or whatever better described as a strength or weakness? If it's described as a strength or weakness, then really, we don't have much of anything to do except for to comfort the person, encourage them to see their doctor, and just continue in compassion. I think that's so simple. You don't need to know what's in the DSM-5 or wherever we're at. Have compassion and just ask, does the Bible prohibit or command this? And if not, is it better described as a strength or weakness?
Okay, so let's do a quick case study of this because I love what you just said. So you walk into someone's house and they have been feeling depressed, or you have a friend and they've been feeling depressed. They literally are feeling depressed. So they're in bed. And they've been in bed for days. They do not come out, and they don't visit, and they're not happy. You invite them to go to a movie, they don't want to come.
Yeah.
In fact, they are consistently tired. Now you go through the question. Okay, is this a biblical problem, or is this an issue of weakness? So you go with someone who's that fatigued and that tired. Well, that's not a biblical problem. They're not lazy. They are sick. right? Now, let's go to this, go to the, another one. This person is depressed and they have turned to alcohol, or they have turned to drugs, or they've turned to cutting, or they have turned, mm-hmm. they have decided they're going to run away from their family, or pick a dozen things. Yep. Now we come to this person, we ask the question, is what they're doing right now sin? Is it something that we need to address? Is it something we need to help them with? And we need to say, okay, listen, I get where you're at when it comes to how you feel, but the way you're dealing with it is unhealthy and sinful, and mm-hmm. it's just going to hurt you in the end. So don't. I'm going to help mm-hmm. you with that, right? That's not weakness, that's sin.
Yeah, and I think when we have someone who's in that kind of really dark state like that, we make it sound that way. It's not going to be a simplistic answer.
No.
You may find someone who, let's go to the first scenario again, who's lying in bed, who's feeling depressed and weak, and that may appear to be almost entirely physical, but you may find out if you know them and you're a friend, you have compassion on them at that point. And this is why I say that.
Yeah.
Pray with them, be with mm-hmm. them. You may find out, maybe 10 years ago they had an abortion and they've been feeling very guilty about it for a long time. And the guilt's begun to eat at them to the point they can't get up anymore.
And something happened last week that just flashed that into their head.
Mm-hmm. But they're not going to open with that. They might not even know it themselves, but because you're there for them, that may come out. On the other hand, they may have cancer. They may have a tumor that's pressing in on one of their glands that's causing a hormonal change in their body, and they need to go to the doctor. So I think when you have a friend like that, have compassion and really encourage mm-hmm. them. See their doctor. And just be a friend.
And know this, guys, it's going to take energy and it's going to take time, and they're not going to be like, oh, thanks so much for coming over, I feel so better. They're going to say, no, you know what, not tonight. I really can't do it. And because just having a conversation is agonizing and hard, and they feel, mm-hmm. they already feel bad and they already feel guilty. So you being there can just reinforce feelings of guilt of what they wish they could do. So it's really hard.
You know what they say, being there for someone who's suffering is easy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all the time. You know, that's why everybody's signing up to be nurses and going on the mission field. Yeah, because
actually that's an associated topic to this that I won't get into, but often caregivers, the burden that's on them puts them in a place that they need support too. And so going back to Steve's question of churches, and that's just transitioning back there, back to Steve's question of churches. Being supportive of people who are supporting others is actually more important than you think, because they will, for the sake of the sick person, try to put on their best face, do mm-hmm. their best work, but inside they can be really struggling.
Yeah, exhausted.
And if you know someone, physical, mental, whatever, if you know someone who's caring for someone who's going through suffering, one of the easiest ways, one of the nicest ways people help, bring meals over to that person, do little things, just be thoughtful of the whole process. And that's where the church as a family comes in.
Oh, yeah. Really, yeah. I mean, we could go on that wherever, forever. Pray for that person. You know, seek to understand them. Go read a book about depression. Mm-hmm. You know, forward them this podcast. Go online and Google some things about depression. Yeah, like, really, educate yourself and then see if you can help them out. That's,
keep on inviting them into things. Pray for them.
Yeah.
And when possible, when they let you, pray with them.
Yeah.
That's so important. Yes, no, really quick. This is a question that I've been asked lots of times.
Yes.
Medications for depression, is it wrong biblically? Yes or no?
Not possible to answer yes or no. If the medication...
I knew you'd get there.
You can't. Man.
If the medication is given exclusively for depression, be very wary of it, because that's a very difficult place to go. If the medication is given for hormone issues, people have... hormone issues, great. They probably need it. You're not a doctor. You don't need to mess with it. I would basically just say that tell people to deal with their doctor as far as their medications, but make sure the medications are for some sort of illness in their body, not just for a philosophical idea. Pump them full of Ritalin or Prozac or whatever we think they might possibly need to get them happier, because that's actually a Band-Aid that can be hiding the more serious, real, including cancer and you know, other serious diseases of the body that are being masked by just quick, give them a dose of something to make them happier, and spiritual things. So it's not a simple answer.
So let me just jump in there and agree with Chad to say and to clarify a little bit. It is a hugely complicated issue because some of these things are way overprescribed. You can walk into a GP and he can hand you, without even doing any kind of assessment, he can hand you all kinds of meds that really, and these are not light deals. I've been on some of them, and one of them, it screwed my brain up so bad I couldn't remember my kids. kids. Another one gave me what would call lightning storms in my brain that Ooh. They actually, it felt like I was basically licking 9-volt batteries and then sticking really? Them into my frontal cortex. Like it was really bad. So it's not just something you go and try mm-hmm. and jump into thoughtlessly. Really talk to your doctor, talk to a psychiatrist. Don't get into these things lightly because it is a... Yes, if you have a medical issue and they can help you out, great. But really, they're not to be taken lightly. They're not just a simple, easy solution to make everything better. They are some pretty serious things. And it almost sounds like what we're talking about with marijuana. It, you know, like this idea of use the medicine as medicine because it's medicine. But there's a lot of people out there not using it properly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening today.
Last thing. I've been doing a sermon series on Christians and depression, so if you are looking for something, check out my website, Art of the Christian Ninja, and you'll be able to find some stuff on there about Christians and depression, hopefully to help you out.
To find out more about carnivore theology, get some custom merchandise, download bulletin inserts and posters, or send us some ideas about topics you'd like us to cover, visit our website at www.carnivoretheology.com. For even more carnivore theology content, check out our new CT Shorts video series on our YouTube channel. If you like what we're doing, please share us with your church and friends, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And as always, we encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
That was my L impression, by the way.
Oh, I didn't notice that. It wasn't nearly enough dread in it.
I see.
Where's he going? We're in the middle of recording. The audio is recording. Why did he leave?
Maybe he had to run like he did at Subway last time.
Oh, man. He better not be. That's not good.
I just needed some more coffee.
Oh, you son of a gun.
Now I spilled, so I just need to...
This is off. Come back! We're in the middle of an episode! If you would have been there and you would have been worshiping and prayed and took communion, you wouldn't have these kind of feelings.
Food. Food. Food poisoning and being stabbed are real medical problems. He needs bandages and stitches and antibiotics and bed rest to get better, you idiot.
See, that's a mean skit. So you better do our intro so that people know what we're talking about. Because I'm going to get letters and emails and Facebook posts if we don't explain what I just did there.
Wait, that was a skit? I thought that was just a...
You mean more hate mail towards Al?
Al, that just came all too naturally to you. So depression.
We heard Al's real personal actual views just a little bit earlier. If you have concerns with anything that Al said, please send your email to
Al.
Yeah, send your complaints to carnivoretheology@gmail.com and in the header write, hate Al. We'll know exactly where to send them.
Yeah, I know exactly where to send those.
We actually have a subfolder that Gmail just automatically filters those into.
Any hate language goes right to there and it just automatically forwards to Al. So.